We're holding on your Demo Amadei's first line of the wide lines. Good morning, Russia.
Good morning, Alexandra.
So we said in the Mishnah, Merchant Paris Ksus Vekalim Merchant Betzina. We said people who are selling produce or clothing or utensils on Chol HaMoed are allowed to sell in private. They're not allowed to like open their store completely, but like they can sell, they can sell in small quantities for Yom Tov in private. Now we said in the Mishnah, then we continued in the Mishnah, saying that there were various kinds of people, trappers who trap animals or birds for a living, people dashoshes, people who break up, who crush and break up wheat to sell for daisa, for porridge or other such things that they would use that kind of thing for garosis. And we said people who do the same kind of thing with beans, they grind up or break up beans. Or peas for split pea soup and other such things. So we said they also can do betzina, they can prepare a certain amount of it, betzina, for Yom Tov to sell. On Yom Tov, Rabbi Yossi says, Hey machmir al atman. Rabbi Yossi says they were machmir on themselves. Now, what does Rabbi Yossi mean by that? Iboilahu. Hey machmir al atman, do I have avdi klal? What does Rabbi Yossi mean? Does he mean the Tanakhama is telling us that you're allowed to, and Rabbi Yossi, that they're allowed to do these things on Yom Tov? And Rabbi Yossi says that may be that they're allowed to, but you should know that they were machmer on themselves not to. Or Duma to have abdi betzina, or maybe the other way around. Maybe Rabbi Yossi means the fact that you have to do it betzina is only a chumrah that these guys, that these various craftsmen themselves came up with. Me'ikar adin, you'd be allowed to do it even fully in public. So is Rabbi Yehuda, is Rabbi Yossi essentially coming to be makel against the Tanakhama to say this that you're saying, Tanakhama, that it has to be Vitzina, is only a Chumrah that these people came up with? Or is he saying the Chumrah against the Tanakhama? You, Tanakhama, are saying they can do it Vitzina, and they're actually Machmer on themselves not to do it at all. So Toshma, let's prove it from a Braisa. The Braisa says, Mokher Peres Ksus V'Kalim, people who sell produce and clothes and Kalim, they're allowed to sell it privately, again, like without opening their store all the way, for people who need these things for Yom Tov or for Chol HaMoed. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, Tagri Tveria, Heinach Miran Latzman, you should know that the merchants of Tveria were machmer on themselves, Shaloyu Merchant Kol Iker, that they shouldn't sell at all. So we see, as far as that, and as far as the next few, that Rabbi Yehuda that Rabbi Yossi is being machmer. The Tanakhama is saying in the Braisa and also in the Mishnah that they could sell just betzina, and Rabbi Yossi is saying actually they are machmer on themselves not even to sell betzina. Similarly, continues the Braisa, sode chayes v'oifes v'dogim, people who trap animals or birds or fish in order to be able to sell them. Sudden betzina of tzarich hamoyed. Again, they're allowed to do their job of trapping for Chol HaMoed, but only where people need it for Chol HaMoed or for Yom Tov, but only betzina, only in a quiet way. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Sodei Akoi, Heinach Mira Latzman. Rabbi Yossi says the trappers of Akoi. Akoi is a coastal town, so in particular, there were many fishermen over there, so they were machmer on themselves. Shalo yot sudden kol ikar, that they shouldn't be trapping animals or fish or whatever at all. So again, he's machmer over the Tanakhama. Continues the Braisa. Doshoshe chilka tagus v'tisni. The people whose job was to be dosh, to thresh or to break up. Rashi gives two explanations. One is that doshoshe means people who thresh grain. The other is that doshoshe means where they break up the grain, as we said, into larger pieces that are then going to be used for firefall or dicer or whatever. So those people who make chilka tagus v'tisni, which we'll define soon what those are, doshishin v'tzina l'tzarech ha-moyed, again, they're allowed to do that work of threshing or breaking up the grain kernels for tzarech ha-moyed. Rabbi Yossi Omer, doshoshi tzipori, hei nechmer al atzman. Rabbi Yossi says the doshoshi of tzipori were machmer on themselves, shelo yuch doshishin kol ikar, that they shouldn't do it at all during Chol HaMoed. Perhaps just the reason why Rabbi Yossi is mentioning one city by each of these things. I mean, obviously, it means, I guess, that the people in other cities didn't necessarily. But the idea would be that maybe in Tveria, their specialty was selling in stores, and therefore he mentions there that the storekeepers were machmer. In Akko, their main specialty was fishing or trapping. Therefore, he mentions that and so forth. So anyway, so we see, therefore, that Rabbi Yossi is so we see that Rabbi Yossi is being machmir. He's saying all of these things that you Tanakama are saying are allowed to be done with Sina, but actually you should know that the people who do these jobs themselves were machmir on themselves and don't do it at all during Chol HaMoed. Okay, now what is Chilka Targus Fatisti that we just said? Omer Abaya, Chilka Chodol Tarti. Chilka means when you take each grain of wheat and crush it in a coarse way, so each grain is split into two. The point is, all these ones, Targus Chodol Tlas, Tisni Chodol Arba, Targus is when each grain is broken into three, Tisni is when each one is broken into four. The point is, in other words, so we're talking how finely it's broken up. So none of them are broken up anywhere near the consistency of flour. All of them, you still have relatively large pieces of grain. The point is, though, that you'd have when they make farfel or daisa or whatever kinds of food they made out of it, they'd have of different sizes and therefore of different consistencies. So that's what those things are. On the other hand, he also said, Rabdimi Omar, when Rabdimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that chilka is not grains of wheat broken one into two, but rather kunsa, rather it's spelt. So they would take spelt and they would soak it in water, and that's what we call chilka. The Pashtos, he agrees that the other ones, Targus and Tisni, are grain broken up into three or four, respectively. He just argues on chilka. So the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction against Rav Dimi's understanding. A Braisa says, Chilka, Targus, and Tisni, Tmein, Bechol Makom. That these three things, Chilka, Targus, and Tisni, anywhere where they are, whether in the villages or whether in the large cities, they're Makabel Tumah. Now, what it is, in other words, like this. Rashi explains, when it comes to flour, then there's a difference. One of the things that you do in the process of making grain into flour is you soak the grain in water for a while to make it that then when you grind it, it makes it that then you're able to get the bran more easily off, and therefore you have cleaner white flour. So when it comes to that, people in big cities are particular about that. Therefore, they do the soaking of the grains in water. It's called loisis. Whereas people in villages don't care about that. They don't care if their flour and their bread has bran mixed into it, and therefore they don't do this loisising. So when it comes to flour, there's going to be a difference. If you buy flour in the big city, it's going to be mukshar lekabel tumah because at some point they made the grain wet. Whereas in the villages, not necessarily, and therefore it's not mekabel tumah. But the Braisa is saying that when it comes to chilka, targus, and tisni, inevitably you have to have done lasisa at some point, and therefore all of them are mekabel tumah. So the Gemara says, "B'shleima l'manda amachod l'tarki l'plas l'arba." So according to Abaya, that chilka is also grains of wheat that have been broken up, one each grain broken up into two pieces. So then, mishum hachi tmein b'chol makom. Then we understand why would it be makabel tumah anywhere, even in the villages. The iskasher, because after all, it had to have been mukshar makabel tumah. They had to have soaked it in water at some point before. Before they break them up to make chilka, targus, or tisni. Evel amanda amakunsa. But if you say, like Rav Dimi says, that chilka means spelt grains, well, then I might name b'chomakim. Why are they makabel tumah? Holo iskasher. Spelt grains are not necessarily mukshar l'kabel tumah. When were they necessarily soaked that they would be mukshar l'kabel tumah? And the answer is to go into miklafon. The answer is that you're talking about these are spelt grains that have been peeled. The outer husk of them has been peeled off. The e lav the shortalu b'mayel. I have a miklafa. It wouldn't be possible to peel off that husk if they hadn't previously been soaked in water. So therefore, so you're right. If we were talking about that somebody is selling raw spelt grains, which have never been processed, then yeah, they wouldn't be mukshar l'kabel tumah. But because we're talking about where you're selling peeled, where you're selling ones without the peel or without the husk, therefore, necessarily, they had to have been soaked. Therefore, they're mukshar l'kabel tumah. V'amai kori l'chilka. So why, we can understand, according to Abaya, why grain broken in half would be called chilka. Meloshen chelek. Meloshen, it's divided into parts. Each grain is divided into two. But according to Rav Dimi, that it means spelt, why is it called chilka? And the reason is the shoko chalkaihu. because the part, the rough part is taken off them and they're left smooth. That outside, that outer husk of spelt is rough. So when you remove it, you have just the grain left, which is smooth. Therefore, in other words, according to the Bimi, the word chilka is not like a buyer would be saying meloshin chelik, apart, but rather meloshin cholok, which means smooth. Because now that you took off the husk, now the grain is smooth. Okay, the Gemara says, Mesvi, though I have another contradiction on Rav Dimi's opinion that chilka is peeled spelt. A Mishnah in Nedarim, a Braisa actually in Nedarim says, Hanodim in a dogon, if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat grain, also after pull on mitzvah yavish. So dogon doesn't just mean grain, dogon means anything that is that digun is done to it, digun meaning setting up a pile of the completed product. So you have, for example, in the case of grain, the way it's said throughout Shas is that you come to a point after you've threshed it and winnowed it and done all that, then you make a pile of the grains, of the individual grains of wheat or barley, you make a big pile of them and you smooth out the pile, which is called miruach, and at that point it's considered dagon, and it's chayiv and truma and meiser and so forth. So now the point is that kind of process is done not only for grain, but also, for example, for beans, or peas. So therefore, so if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat dagon, then he's also to eat polan mitzvi, which is a type of bean, because again, they do the same kind of thing. They make, when they're done processing it and removing all the various things that are not the beans, then they're left. Then they make a big pile of it. So therefore, it's called dagon. Umutter balach. Now he's not allowed to eat rather dry polan mitzvi, because dry polan mitzvi, they would do that kind of thing. They'd make a pile of it. Umutter balach. On the other hand, this person who made such a neder is allowed to eat fresh polan mitzvi, because that they don't make a pile of. Umutter ba'orez. The person is also allowed to eat orez. The usual translation of orez, most of the mafoshim understand that orez is rice. Rashi in a couple of places translates it as millet, which is why we have the famous thing about when we eat rice, what bracha do we say on it? Anyway, so whatever it is, so the person who made a neder not to eat dagon is allowed to eat oras, whether it's rice or millet, as the case may be, because that's not considered dagon. You don't make a pile of it in the same way. And he's also allowed to eat the chilk of a tagus fetisni. He's also allowed to eat those various kinds of cracked wheat. So according to Abaya, that chilka, taugus, and tisni are all broken up, are all cracked grains of wheat. Well, then we understand why he should be mutter to eat them. The shaper, then it's good. The nafgalu mutaras dagon. At that point, once they've been processed like that, then they're no longer considered dagon. Nobody, after they make chilka, taugus, or tisni, nobody would make a pile of it and smooth out the pile such that it should be considered dagon. So in other words, this person would be usur to eat raw wheat before anything was done to it, after it was made into a pile. But then when you take it out of the pile and you make it, and you make chilka, taugus, or tisni of it, then he'd be, or let alone, of course, when you grind it into flour or whatever, then he'd be allowed to eat it. But according to the Dimi, that chilka specifically means spelt. So then dagon malyahu. Isn't that full-fledged dagon? After all, you have dagon definitely includes the chameshas aminim, the five species that are considered grain in halacha, and spelt is one of them. So why should this person who made a neder not to eat dagon, why should he be allowed, according to the Dimi, to eat spelt? I mean, what says kasha? You're right, according to the Dimi, we're left with a kasha. As usual, kasha doesn't mean tiyuvda, means there is a possible answer to it. Maybe a possible answer is that when you make a pile of it, you would still have the husk on it, and only afterwards, when you're getting ready to prepare it for food, then you would take off those husks. So maybe therefore, when it has the husks, it's still dagon, whereas Rav Dimi is talking about after that. But whatever the case, the point is that so the Gemara leaves it with a kasha. Getting back now to dinim of Chol HaMoed, Rav Huna shorolahu lahanu krufyasa. Rav Huna gave a heter to krufyasa, which means, Rashi says it means people who sell spices. So he gave them permission on Chol HaMoed lemeza lazabuni ki uchayu b'shuka, that they could go and sell their spices normally in the marketplace on Chol HaMoed. Esved of Kahana. So Rav Kahana says, how could you do that? Don't we learn in a braisa? Chanus psucha l'stov. If you have a store which is open up into a stov. A stov is an area with is an area where the rabbim don't walk there so much. You have those the shus rabbim, then you have a stov, which is a semi enclosed and often roofed over area near a shus rabbim. So fewer people walk there. So, for example, the Nemuka Yosef on the Rif described that we're talking about it has three walls around it and it has a roof. So therefore, it's almost more like a side street or a side area. It's not open directly into Rosh Hashanah. Whatever the case, so if you have a store that's open like that, then you're allowed to open and close the store normally. But if the store opens directly into Rosh Hashanah, as most stores did in those days, so in the case where it's open to the stub, there's already a degree of privacy to the store. Therefore, when you open it up, it's still considered that you're acting with sina. You're not doing it in full view of everybody. Therefore, you're allowed to open the store normally. But if the store opens directly into Rosh Hashanah, then you can't open the store normally. Then you're only allowed to open one door of the store, but you have to keep the other door closed to show that, like, you're not completely open, and to show that way you're not selling kedarka. And continues the Braisa, the Erev Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag, on the day before Shmini Atzeres, so on Hashayna Rabba, Moitzi, he can bring out his produce, Uma'ater Es Shukri Ha'ir B'Peres, and decorate the markets of the city with fruit. So in other words, on Hashayna Rabba, specifically, you're allowed to go and spread out your fruit normally for sale. So that way the marketplaces look more beautiful, that there's lots of fruit over there available for sale. Vishluk Vod Yom Tov Achron, because of the honor of the last day of Shmini Atzeres, you want to honor it by getting extra food. Meposhim explained that the reason why we're saying only on Erev Yom Tov Achron Shel Chag is because Shmini Atzeres is a Yom Tov of its own. Therefore, they wanted to honor it by decorating the marketplaces like that, having lots of food available, as opposed to on Erev Shvi'i Shel Pesach. Shvi'i Shel Pesach is not a separate Yom Tov. We see, for example, we don't say full halal on it. Therefore, they didn't have this point of decorating the marketplaces like that. So therefore, the rules on the sixth day of Pesach were still the same as the rest of Chol HaMoed. You can only sell betzina. But anyway, so the Braisa is saying, so now the Gemara says, so we're only saying that you're allowed to bring out the fruit and spread it out and sell it normally because of the honor of the last day of Yom Tov, because in honor of Shmini Atzeres, Shalom Mipnek Void Yom Tov Loi, but not otherwise. So how is Rav Huna allowing these krufiyosa, these people we said who are selling spices, to go and sell normally on Chol HaMoed? And the answer is, like Kasha, Hoba Peri Hoba Tavlin. It depends whether they're selling fruit or tavlin. Rashi explains that tavlin doesn't mean necessarily spices. It means, for example, vegetables that are used to flavor food, or that are used to flavor soups or whatever. For example, he says it includes cabbage and karshinin, which is a type of bean, or on the bottom, on the side of here, it says really it's supposed to be kreshin, which are leeks, whatever. The difference is that when you're selling fruit, who says that necessarily that you're selling in quantities and the customer is buying in quantities only enough for Yom Tov? What if they're buying for after Yom Tov? And that would be a bazillion of Chol HaMoed. So as opposed to when you buy these tavlin of cabbage, like we said, cabbage or leeks or what have you, everybody knows they're for Chol HaMoed because they don't last very long. They didn't have refrigeration in those days, so they don't last very long. So therefore, you're allowed to sell them in full view of everybody because everybody knows that whatever is being sold of them is for Chol HaMoed. Tosfos discusses that no, tavlin may mean exactly what it sounds like, various kinds of spices, where I guess the idea would be people buy those in small quantities specifically for Yom Tov, as opposed to, we said, Paris people sometimes buy in large quantities and much of it might be for after Yom Tov. So the maskana, that's what it is. In other words, you are allowed to sell in small quantities things that are needed for Chol HaMoed. Where possible, you do it with sina, for example, like we said, opening one door and closing the other, or you often find stores that have shorter hours during Chol HaMoed is another example of that, where the idea being they want to be open only for people who need to buy things for Yom Tov, not for people who want to buy things to save for after Yom Tov. There was an interesting point Rav Moshe makes in one of his Tshuvas. What if you have, for example, let's say you're, let's say he gives an example, yeshiva bacharim who are home doing Yom Tov and doing Chol HaMoed, would they be allowed to, while they're in town, they want to be able to buy things to take back with them to yeshiva? So he says, better what they should do is wait until the day after, wait until Isru Chag, and then go buy it rather than doing it during Chol HaMoed. The only way would be if you're gonna have a bacher who literally torosei umnosei, he never takes time off of his learning, and therefore now during Chol HaMoed, he has a break, and therefore he wants to do it, then fine. But how many bacherim do you have nowadays who do that, who actually are learning constantly and never slacking off? Therefore, better for everybody else, what you should do, he says, is just wait until Isru Chag, then stock up on what you need, and then that way you'll take that with you to yeshiva. Okay. Hadron alach misha hafach. This next perek, which is the last perek of Moed Katan, even though we're only halfway through the Masechta, deals with the main topics that it deals with are more malachas that are allowed and not allowed on Chol HaMoed. And then we're going to have a major subsection of this perek is also going to deal with the dinim of avelus and the dinim of nidui. Because we're going to start out by saying that there are certain things which you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to take haircuts or do laundry during Chol HaMoed, with certain exceptions that we're going to learn in the Mishnah. By the same token, a person in Avelos is not allowed to do either of those things, and a person in Nidui is not allowed to do either of those things. So therefore, the Mishnah and the Gemara use this opportunity to talk about the dinim of Avelos and the dinim of Nidui, which otherwise there isn't really a place for them elsewhere in Shas. So those are the main topics of our parak. Mishnah starts off, Ve'elu Megalchen Mamoyed, the following people are allowed to cut their hair on Chol, shave on Chol HaMoed. Habomim Dinaseyam, a person who came from an overseas trip, so it was an earnest, he wasn't able to take a haircut while he was away on the trip. The Pashtus, that wouldn't necessarily apply nowadays, because you could easily take a haircut wherever you are, but okay, anyway. Tosfos points out, by the way, why the Vav of Ve'elu Megalchen Mamoyed, because we just said previously things that you're allowed to do with Tzorech HaMoyed. So now we're saying here you also have, so there we're saying that, for example, you're allowed to sell fruit on Chol HaMoed for the sake of Chol HaMoed, the same way over here you're allowed, those cases where you're allowed to take haircuts on Chol HaMoed, even though usually you shouldn't, even though usually you're not allowed to. So the first one, Abomim Dinaseyam, where a person comes from an overseas trip, or we base a shivya, or a person was in jail or in captivity. And Mephoshim, by the way, point out something that even if he was in a jail that's run by Jews, where you would think they would have allowed him to take a haircut in jail, they know that Yom Tov is coming. Nevertheless, it's not that a person when he's in jail doesn't usually want to take a haircut. He's sad. He's frustrated over the fact that he's in jail or whatever. So therefore, you don't expect him to be taking a haircut. You don't expect him to be taking a haircut in jail. So now, when he comes out of jail or captivity or whatever, then he's allowed to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed. Vayotzim beisas, actually, beisas shivya means captivity. Vayotzim beisas surin, or he got out of jail. And also a person who was in nidui, who the chachamim were matter to him. So now he can cut his hair. The Gemara is going to discuss what does that mean. Does it mean that a menuda, the chachamim always allow him to cut his hair during Chol HaMoed? That's what it means. That could be one meaning of shi'tiru like chachamim. Or the other possibility, it means that this menuda during Chol HaMoed, the chachamim were matter the nidui. Now, Tosfos on the next Amud points out, the Yerushalmi asks, why should that one be mutter? He should have gone to the Chachamim and got his nidui removed before Yom Tov. The fact that he didn't, why does that allow him to cut his hair during Chol HaMoed? So Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that, let's say, for example, they put him in nidui for 30 days, where there's no shortening those 30 days, and it comes out, the last of the 30 days comes out during Chol HaMoed. Yeah, there can be other, Mephoshim might point out other examples. For example, there can be that, let's say, they put him in nidui because he's not obeying what Beis Din says. And let's say he didn't have the opportunity to undo that until Chol HaMoed. Continues the Mishnah, v'chein misha nisha l'chocham v'hutar. Similarly, if a person had made a neder not to cut his hair, and then during Chol HaMoed, he asked He asked the Rav and was matir neder. So the same. So now again, because he couldn't do it before Chol HaMoed, now he's allowed to do it during Chol HaMoed. Again, what's the case where he couldn't have done it before Yom Tov? So Tosfos brings, well, let's say he wasn't able to get to the Chacham before Yom Tov, or let's say for example, in order to be Matir Neder, you need a Pesach. You need the Rav or the Beis Din being Matir Neder has to be able to say to the guy, if you knew that such and such would happen, would you have made this Neder? That's called a Pesach. So let's say they couldn't find a Pesach before Yom Tov, and now during Yom Tov they found one. Another interesting example that Marsha gives of where you could have that the neder could only be mutter on Yom Tov. Let's say, for example, the person had made a neder that looking ahead to the coming Yom Tov, if I eat such and such during Chol HaMoed, then as of now, I won't be allowed to cut my hair. Now, the din is that to be mutter such a neder, you have to wait until it's actually chal. So therefore, if he were to go to Beis Din before Yom Tov and be Matir Neder, they would tell him, look, it's not Yom Tov yet. You haven't yet eaten that thing, though, that fruit or whatever, that your Neder depends on. Wait until you do, then we'll talk about it. So now, during Chol HaMoed, he ended up eating that food. Now the Neder takes effect. So now he wants to go to be Matir Neder. So now that gives him the possibility of taking a haircut. Also, v'hanozir, also a nozir, v'hametzora, and a metzora, mitum osir, the tahara osir, who's going from tumah to tahara. Rashi explains that the word mitum osir, the tahara osir, is going on both the nozir and the metzora. So we mean a nozir who became tumah, and now in the middle of Chol HaMoed, he has to cut his hair and start his nezirus over again. And the same way, a metzora, whose tzaras is over during Chol HaMoed, and therefore, and he has to shave his hair. Actually, the Metzora has a couple of times when he has to shave his hair. One of them is at the end of his seven clean days. And so if that comes out during Chol HaMoed. Different other Mephoshim learn that Nazir can also include a Nazir Tahar. Even if he's a regular Nazir, he finished his Nazirus during Chol HaMoed. And now he wants to, so now the mitzvah is he has to shave his hair and bring his Korbanos. The Mishnah Lamelech points out that Rashi might disagree with that because Rashi might say he can bring his korbanos and he can shave later. He doesn't necessarily need to shave during Chol HaMoed. That might be why Rashi focuses on the case where the Nazir became Tomei because the Nazir Tahar, according to Rashi, might not have the heter to shave during Chol HaMoed. So other Mephoroshim learn that Mitumasa, the Taharasa, is a more general statement. It means, not more general, but rather it refers to the Metzora. So a Nazir would be allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed, whether it's that he was Tomei and now is Tahar, or whether it's that he finished his Nazirus. And then on the other hand, a Metzora, when he's becoming no longer Tomei and he has to shave, then he's able to do that during Chol HaMoed. Continues the mission of Elu Mechabsin Mamoed. The following people are allowed to do laundry on Chol HaMoed, even though, again, as we're going to say in the Gemara, normally people are not allowed to do laundry during Chol HaMoed because the expectation is you should have done it before Chol HaMoed. With both of these things, we're going to explain in the Gemara why it is you're not allowed haircuts and laundry during Chol HaMoed. So now here are the exceptions where you're allowed to. Again, the same basic list. A person came from an overseas trip, or out of captivity, or out of jail, or if he was in Nidui and the Chachamim were matter it for him on Chol HaMoed. The same way a person had a neder not to do laundry and then he got a heter, he was matter neder. And also mitbechos yadayim, also hand towels, or mitbechos saparim, and cloth that are used. By barbers, when you go take a haircut, they have a cloth that they wrap around you, and so the hair doesn't get on your clothing. So when you have people who are allowed to take haircuts on Chol HaMoed, like we just described, then you're allowed to wash those smocks on Chol HaMoed. Different other Mephoroshim talk about different possibilities that it may not be hasaporim, but rather hasforim or hasofrim. So they talk about different possibilities. It might be cloth that they use to cover sforim, such as Sifrei Torah, that are in the process of being written. So those get dirty all the time from ink and from oil and whatever, and you're allowed to wash them. And another possibility is mitbechos sforim, meaning cloths that are used to wrap Sifrei Torah and other sforim. Anyway, so those you're allowed to wash on Chol HaMoed because they get dirty all the time, or mitbechos asfog and towels. So those you're allowed to wash on Chol HaMoed. Also continues the Mishnah, hazoven vahazoves hanidus vahayodus. These the zoven, zovos, nidos, and women who gave birth, who are all tomei, v'chola olin v'tumah l'tara. Anybody else who's going from tumah to tara, where they need, there are many cases where the Torah says that the person himself is tomei and his clothes are tomei, so he has to dip his clothes in a mikveh. Harei elam utarin. So all those people are allowed to wash their clothes on Chol HaMoed with the zovim, the zovos, the nidos, and the yodos. It's not only that they're necessarily washing them for tumah; it can also mean they're washing them for cleanliness. They got blood or ziva or whatever on them. So then they're allowed to do laundry during Chol HaMoed, Ushar Kolad Masur, and everybody else is also for reasons that we're going to say in the Gemara. So that's the Gemara asks, Ushar Kolad my time Masurin. Why indeed is everybody else also to take haircuts and to do laundry on Chol HaMoed? You would think, on the contrary, doing those things are things of Simcha, and it should be allowed. So Tosfos discusses actually that taking a haircut may be considered Malacha. Maybe to trim your hair or something wouldn't be malacha, but maybe a full haircut would be considered a malacha. Nevertheless, since it enhances your simcha of Yom Tov, then it should be allowed during Chol HaMoed. And the reason is, why not? Kiditnan is like we learned in Masechta Tainis, Anshe Mishma v'Anshe Maimon Asurim L'Saper L'Chabes. The people who are serving in the Mishmar in the Bais HaMikdash, each week they had a different Mishmar of Koyanim serving, and the people of the Maimed, where we said over there you had people whose job, they had also a rotation of 24 Ma'amodis. Some of them would stand in the Bais HaMikdash and watch the Korbanos being brought as representatives of the Jewish people, and others would gather in their shuls in different places in Eretz Yisrael and do special fasts and special tefillahs and whatever on behalf of the Jewish people. So those people, each one during their week, Asurim l'saper l'chabes, they're not allowed to take haircuts and they're not allowed to wash their clothes. And the reason, which we'll say in a second why, over chamishi mutonim apnei kvod haShabbos, but during the Thursday of their week, of their mishmer or their maimed, they are allowed to, because of the kavod of Shabbos. That now, in principle, they could do it on Friday as well, but on Friday you don't usually do these things because they're very time consuming and you have better things to do on Friday. But anyway, my timer, why don't we allow them to take haircuts or do laundry during their week of their mishmer or their maimed? You don't want them to come into their mishmer or into their maimed looking unkempt, figuring to themselves that sometime during the week, I'll get around to cutting my hair or doing my laundry. We want them to look their best when they first come to the Bais HaMikdash or when they first come to their maimed. So Hochanami, so the same thing with Chol HaMoed. The reason is Kadesh Lay Consul Rego, Train Minavolin, you don't want people coming into Yom Tov looking unkempt and figuring again, I'll cut my hair and I'll do laundry during Chol HaMoed because I have time anyway. Therefore, the Chacham said that normally such things are also during Chol HaMoed. So now the Gemara says, by the way, with the Mishmar and the Maimed, you have an exception given for Thursday. With Chol HaMoed, you don't really have that. A number of the Mefarshim discuss that and give different reasons why. One of them is, if you did that, then the whole Takana would fall apart. It's one thing for the Anshe Mishmar and the Anshe Maimed. It's a small group of people. You can tell them that they're allowed to do laundry on Thursday and it won't ruin it. That nobody's going to start thinking that they're allowed to do it the rest of the week. Whereas if you allow people to take haircuts and do laundry on the Thursday of Chol HaMoed, then they're apt to do it during other times of Chol HaMoed as well. Okay, the Gemara says, Boyer Rav Zeira, Ovdalay Aveda Erev HaRegel. What if a person, so we talked about in the Mishnah a couple of cases of Oynes where you couldn't get a haircut before Yom Tov. We said where the person was on a trip or where he was in captivity or in jail. So what about, suppose a person lost something on Erev Yom Tov, and now he's busy looking for it, so therefore he didn't have time for a haircut. Would he be allowed during Chol HaMoed? Kiven de Onis Mutter, do we say that since it's a case of Oynes, then he's allowed? Or maybe it's not so obvious, not everybody knows that he was Onus. When a person comes home from a trip, or was in captivity, or in jail, or whatever, then it becomes well known that that was the case. Now, when people see him taking a haircut or doing laundry, doing Chol HaMoed, they're not going to think that he's being over on the halacha, or they're not going to think that you're allowed to. They're going to realize he was in a special circumstance. But when a person lost something on Erev Yom Tov, it's not so obvious to everybody that he was an onus. People are now thinking that he's dafka waiting till Chol HaMoed to take his haircut. So that's so is that allowed or is it not allowed? Omar Abaya. So Abaya says we can argue that it's not allowed. You have a case that the Gemara tells about in Psachim. The Gemara mentions over there a din. You're not allowed to, when you're baking matzahs for Pesach, you're not allowed to make drawings or designs on them because that takes a lot of time to make. And meanwhile, the dough might become chametz. So the Gemara discusses over there that someone named Baitus Ben Zunin said to the Chachamim, well, why is that necessary? Why do you have to answer it completely? After all, some bakers have tfusim, some bakers have molds where they can right away stamp the design into the matzah and then bake it right away, and it doesn't take any longer than making the matzah itself. And the Chachamim answered him with an expression, which Abaya is quoting over here in our context. Yomru, people are going to say, kol ha-srikin asurin srike baitus mutarin, that all other srikim are also, and only the ones made by baitus are mutar. In other words, it's not so obvious. You see matzahs that have designs on them. People won't know which ones were made by baitus with his molds versus which ones were made by other bakers by hand. And they're going to think that you're allowed to do even ones by hand. And then they're going to end up eating possible chametz. So in other words, sometimes we have the Chachamim make such a takana, such a gzera, and they make it across the board, even when the reason doesn't strictly apply. Well, then, by the same token, therefore, so Abaya says that, yeah, over here, it's one thing, again, the cases in the Mishnah, where it's obvious why you didn't take a haircut before, but your case, Reb Zeira, about a person who lost something and found it, that's not a valid enough reason to allow him to take a haircut during Yom Tov. It's people are not going to realize the distinction, and people are going to start taking haircuts during Chol HaMoed all the time. So the Gemara says, V'li taimeich. Well, according to your svara, Abaya, that you're bringing up that point of srike baitus, well then, what about you have hada amar of Asi amar Rabbi Yechanan? But we have a din that Rabbi Asi said in the name of Rabbi Yechanan. Call me she'en lech ela cholok echad. If a person only has one shirt, a cholok is really more like an undershirt. So if a person only has one of those, muta lechabse becholosh amoyed, he's allowed to wash it during Chol HaMoed. Now, the question is, also, when you see a person washing a shirt on Chol HaMoed, you don't know that that's his only shirt. So why don't we say the same thing? Why don't we use the same logic? The average person walking by is not going to know that this person only has the one shirt. They're going to think that he's being over on the dinim of Chol HaMoed, and therefore it's going to be marisayin, and they themselves are going to get careless and start doing laundry during Chol HaMoed. So you see, we don't always say that rule. So why should we say it in the case of a person who lost an object? The answer is, the Gemara says, Ha'itmar Allah. You know that there was said about in connection with that din of Rabbi Yochanan, that Omar Ma'baravashi, Ezore Mechiach Allah. His Ezer, which means his belt, demonstrates what's going on. An interesting point, by the way, is you see, even though the Gemara is attributing that answer to Ma'baravashi, we see that apparently the Gemara assumes that the Chachamim of earlier generations, Ma'abar Avashi, is from the last generation of Amiroyim, but yet we're saying apparently that Abaya should be aware of that, point, and realize, and therefore he should realize that his challenge against Reb Zeira is not a valid challenge. Now, what do we mean, Ezora Mechia Halav? So there's a few different explanations. Rashi explains that usually, a person who only has one Cholok. So when he washes it, then what does he do? He takes it off. Now, he doesn't want to stand there half naked. So what he does is he covers himself with his coat, and then he uses his belt to tie the coat closed. So now when a person sees him over there standing with his coat and a belt around it, then he realizes that the person is not wearing a choluk underneath, and he realizes, therefore, why is that? Because the person only has one choluk. That's how Rashi explains it over here. This Gemara is also brought in Chulin in a different context over there. And Rashi over there explains that Ezora Mechiach Olav means normally you have a belt that you wear over your choluk, and usually you would take it from one choluk and put it on another one. But here, since he only has one choluk, he leaves the belt attached to it, and therefore when people see him washing the choluk together with the belt attached, then they realize it's his only choluk, otherwise he would have put the belt on another one. And then Rabbeinu Chananu gives a third explanation, that it means because he doesn't have a choluk, therefore, necessarily, he's standing there wearing only an azer, wearing only like a belt, like a loincloth or something, like underwear, and then he's standing over there and when washing his shirt, and since he's not wearing anything else, then it becomes very obvious that that's the only choluk he has. Whatever the case, so there you can't say kol asrik and asurin, because there it's very obvious for any of these reasons that he only has the one choluk. So that's not a valid challenge to Reb Zeira's question. That's not a valid challenge to Reb Zeira to say that by the same token, a person who lost something erev yomtiv should not be able to do his laundry on Chol HaMoed because he was busy looking for his lost object. There's no ezer mechia cholav, whereas when a person has one shirt, then there is. Okay, Reb Ashi Masni. Reb Ashi learned that Reb Zeira's question was a little different. Boy, Reb Zeira. Uman sha'avdalei aveda erev regel. According to Rav Ashi's version, there's no question if a regular person lost an aveda, then sure, we're going to say kol asrik and asurin, and we're not going to allow him to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed. What about if he himself is an uman? He himself is the barber in town who gives people haircuts. So what happened was, on erev yomtiv, people were coming to him for haircuts, and they found that his store is closed because he's busy looking for a lost object that he found. So uman, so he lost something out of yomtiv. So mahu, what would be the din? Is he himself allowed to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed? Do we say kiven de uman hu mucha milsa? We can say since he himself is the town barber or one of the town barbers, so it becomes very obvious the fact that he was closed on erev yomtiv. Then people are going to know it's because he was looking for his lost object. So now when people see him taking a haircut during Chol HaMoed, they're not going to think that he's over on the din Rabbanon. They're going to realize it's because now they're going to put two and two together. Ah, that explains why he was closed erev yomtiv, because he was looking for his lost object. And now on Chol HaMoed, now he has the time to take a haircut. Or maybe the fact is it's not as obvious as the ones in the Mishnah, where you have a person was in jail or captivity or whatever, where everybody, it's very obvious why he didn't take a haircut before, whereas over here, it's not as obvious. And the answer is teku. So we leave it unsolved. Different mafoshim say that therefore the poskim are machmer on it, because we said that kind of oinus is not necessarily a valid reason to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed. For that matter, also the post can talk about if a person was sick before Yom Tov and wasn't able to take a haircut. That's not necessarily considered the kind of onus that would allow him to take a haircut Chol HaMoed, because again, it's not so obvious when people see him taking a haircut. Mashenkin, the ones we said in the Mishnah, it's very obvious, therefore those are mutter. Tosfos mentions in this connection that there are also a couple of other exceptions where, in particular, Tosfos brings that children's clothing you're allowed to wash during Chol HaMoed because they get their clothing dirty all the time. So therefore, it's the equivalent of a person having only choluk echad. And obviously, also the point is kids' clothes are different size than adults, so nobody is going to think that he's doing regular laundry on Chol HaMoed. For that matter, also, the post can bring another example. You'd be allowed to wash diapers during Chol HaMoed back when they used cloth diapers for the same reason. We said in the Mishnah in Medina Sayyam, we said when a person comes from an overseas trip, then he's allowed to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara says, Masnissin de loike Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah apparently is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Habam of Medina Sayyam loike galayach. Rabbi Yehuda says that if a person comes from an overseas trip, he's not allowed to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed. Because to begin with, when he left on his trip, he didn't have reshus. So what does that mean? So Rashi explains that he went on a voluntary trip. So therefore, he decided to put himself in that situation. It's not like the other cases in the Mishnah where he's under duress. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say, don't go on the trip and don't have to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed. You don't have a heter for it. The Ravid actually has a different explanation of Shayotza Shaloi Bereshus. Namely, the Ravid says we're talking specifically a person who lives in Eretz Yisrael and traveled to someplace outside Eretz Yisrael. So when we say that he went Shaloi Bereshus, means the Chachamim would not give him permission to leave Eretz Yisrael on a trip like that. So therefore, now when he comes back, we can say he was over on Divrei Chachamim, therefore he doesn't have a heter for a haircut. Mashenkin, according to the Ravid, it would come out that if you're talking any other kind, you're talking the person who's traveling within Eretz Yisrael, or the person who lives in Chutzlar that's traveled someplace else, then he would be allowed to take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnah Brura in Hilchos Chol HaMoed sums it up and says that the primary halacha is like the opinion, you should be choshish for the opinion, not like the Raavad, that say that it applies to any kind of trip. However, if a person wants to be makel based on what the Raavad is saying, then fine, you can get away with it. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Omar Rava, now what's this machlok, this Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, Loshut, if he went to take a pleasure trip, just to go on vacation, then everybody, even the Chachamim, would agree it's Osir for him to take a haircut when he gets back, because there's no question that he didn't have Rishus for that. According to Rashi, that there was no reason for it, there was no particular thing forcing him to do it. And according to the Ravid, we were talking about, where he lives in Eretz Yisrael, he definitely doesn't have a heter to leave Eretz Yisrael just for a pleasure trip. Lemazonis, on the other hand, if he left Eretz Yisrael because he couldn't make a living, he doesn't have food, so then he came back doing Chol HaMoed, then Divrei Hakol Mutter, then everybody would agree that he's Mutter to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed, because then the fact that he left on his trip is considered an oinus. Lo nechlaku ela lahervecha. The machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is where he's going in order to make a profit. So he already has nechasim, but he wants to go and travel out overseas in order to be able to make more money. So now that's the machlokas. Mar medame like loshut. Rabbi Yehuda holds that that's the equivalent of a pleasure trip because he didn't have to go. He has money. Whereas the Chachamim compare it to going from Mazonis, and therefore they would say that's a valid reason to go, and therefore now when he gets back, then he has a valid reason to take a haircut. Okay, the Gemara says, Maestri, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Omar Rebbe, Nirin Divir of Yehuda B'Shiyotza Shaloi B'Rashos, it seems more logical to accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion when he left without Rashos, that he shouldn't be able to take a haircut when he comes back. And on the other hand, it seems more logical to accept the opinion of the Chachamim that he's allowed a haircut when he went out with Rishus. So we have to figure, my shaloi b'Rishus. When you're saying that Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is more reasonable to accept when he left shaloi b'Rishus, that therefore he shouldn't be allowed a haircut on Chol HaMoed, ilema loshut. So do you mean you're talking about that he left for a pleasure trip? Well, then you don't need Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Well, I'm a divrei hakol also. Didn't just say that everybody agrees with also. The Evelim is Zoinus. And if you're talking about that, that he went shaloi b'rashus means he went because he doesn't have food, then I'm a divrei hakol mutter. You just said that even Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to take a haircut then. Ela pshita lahervecha. So evidently, the Braisa has to be talking about where he went out in order to earn more money. So now Rebbe is saying that when he left Shaloi B'Rashus, then it seems more logical to accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. And if we're going to say that Shaloi B'Rashus means he went for Hervecha, well, Ema Sefer, but then Rebbe continues, Nirin Divrei Chachamim, Kshiyotza B'Rashus, that it seems more logical to accept the opinion of the Chachamim when he left B'Rashus. So now let's ask the opposite, my B'Rashus. Ilema L'Mazonis, does B'Rashus mean over here when he went because he doesn't have any food or any money? Well, v'ha'amar divrei hakamotu. You just said even Rabbi Yehuda would allow that, so therefore you don't need to say nirin divrei hachamim in that case. And the elul hervecha, you're talking about where he's going to earn more money. V'ha'amar nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda v'ha. You just finished saying that, assuming that in the first part of the braisa shaloi b'rashus means lahervecha, then you're saying you follow Rabbi Yehuda. So what does he mean? That then he's saying that it seems to logical to accept the opinion of the hachamim. In other words, the question is, given that we're saying Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing only over the one case of Lahervecha, they would both agree it's also if he went on a pleasure trip, and they would both agree it's Mutter if he went from his owners. So what is the scenario where Rebbe is saying it seems more logical to say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that he should be Osir, and it seems more logical to say, according to the Chachamim, that he's Mutter? If it's a case of a pleasure trip, there's no machlokas. Everybody agrees it's osur. You don't have to say, I accept the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda on that. If it was a trip from Mazonis, everybody agrees it's mutter. You don't have to say, I accept the words of a Chachamim. So it has to be talking about where he went, lahavacha. So what is it? And the answer is hachikama. What Rebbe means is, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda lirabbanan. When he says nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda, he doesn't mean it seems more logical to accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. He means the Chachamim themselves find it logical to accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that he's machmir when she yotze shaloi b'rashus, when he left without rashus, umayinu loshut, namely when he went on a pleasure trip. Shafilu chachamim lo nechlok olav ela lahavecha, because the chachamim only disagreed with him on when he went out to earn a profit, av loshut modulei, but when he went on a pleasure trip, they would agree that he's also to take a haircut when he gets back. And vice versa, the nirin divir of Rabbanan Rabbi Yehuda kriyotze b'rashus. Vice versa, when we say nirin divir Rabbanan, we don't mean that for us it's more logical to accept the opinion of the Chachamim in a certain case. We mean Rabbi Yehuda himself is willing to accept the opinion of the Chachamim who are meko kriyotze b'rashus when he went out b'rashus. And Rabbi Yehuda's definition of b'rashus would be umayu niul mezonos, where he went in order to get food. Because even Rabbi Yehuda would only argue on them where he went out for Hervecha, but not when he went out for Mezonis. So in other words, Rebbe is just clarifying, Rebbe is not saying whom we should follow. Rebbe is just clarifying that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim do agree with each other in two out of the three possible cases. They're only arguing on the one case. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Hervecha is not considered Birshus Chachamim, and is not considered Birshus, and therefore that's not a valid reason for him to take a haircut. And the Chachamim would say that it is. But the other two cases, they would both agree that you're allowed and not allowed, respectively. So the Halacha is like the Chachamim, as it usually is. So therefore, if he went for Mizonis or for Hervecha, is what we're talking about when he'd be allowed to take a haircut. If he went Loshut, if he went only for a pleasure trip, then he doesn't have a heter to, according to Rabbi Yehuda, and the Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim would agree with that. Again, according to the Raiva, that would be specifically where he's living in Eretz Yisrael and took a pleasure trip out of the country. And according to everybody else, it would mean it wouldn't matter, just the fact that he voluntarily went on this trip is enough to take away the heter. New topic or new discussion. Amar Shmuel, Katna Nolad B'Moed. If a baby was born during Chol HaMoed, and let's say Rashi says he has long hair, and it's bothering him, Mutar L'Galayach B'Moed. Then you're allowed to cut his hair on Chol HaMoed. An interesting point you see over here is apparently they didn't always have the concept of waiting until three to cut a baby's hair like we do for an upshonish, because here we see we're talking about cutting a baby's hair right after it's born. So you're allowed to do that on Chol HaMoed. It says Shmuel, she'en lecha beis ha'asurin gadol mizeh. Because we said in the Mishnah that somebody who got out of jail on Chol HaMoed is allowed to cut his hair. Well, there's no greater jail than that. It was physically impossible to cut his hair before he was born. Therefore, you'd be allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed, says Shmuel. An interesting point in this, by the way, is what about an upshonish? Are you allowed to do an upshonish during Chol HaMoed? So there are actually different minhagim. There are different opinions and different minhagim on that. On the one hand, we're not doing it. On the one hand, he's not yotzim beis hasurin like we're saying over here. On the other hand, we're not really doing it for pleasure. We're doing it for the mitzvah of leaving payas and for minhag Yisrael. So the Rebbe talks about it in a letter and says me'ikir adin, you would be allowed to. However, the Rebbe was writing to somebody whose kid was born during Chol HaMoed Pesach, and he says, listen, you might as well wait until like Ba'omer and do the upshonish then anyway. It doesn't seem that the Rebbe ever addressed the question of what happens during Chol HaMoed Sukkos. Lamaisa, many Lubavitcher Rabbanim say that what you should do is wait until after Chol HaMoed, even though maybe, as the Rebbe is saying, Me'ikir Adin, you'd be allowed to, but you just wait until after Yom Tov and do it then rather than getting into Shiloh. So Shmuel has said that if a baby was born during Chol HaMoed, you're allowed to cut his hair during Chol HaMoed. So implying, b'moyed ein me'ikraloi, implying only if the baby was born during Chol HaMoed or during Yom Tov, but not if he was born beforehand, and just now you're first getting on Chol HaMoed to cutting his hair, apparently Shmuel would say that's also. But Mosiv Reb Pinchas, Reb Pinchas pointed out a contradiction. A braisa says, kol eilu sh'omer mutar l'galeach b'moyed, all the cases where we said you're allowed to cut your hair during Chol HaMoed, then a person also mutar l'galeach b'mei evloi, then a person is also, if he has similar circumstances during his avelus, he'd be able to cut his hair then. For example, let's say a person came from an overseas trip or got out of jail or whatever during the time of his avelus, and again, he couldn't cut his hair before, so now he'd be allowed to cut it during his avelus. The Gemara later on in the Perek is also going to talk about, you can have a scenario which is called kafuhu avelov, where he was an oval for two relatives back to back. Like, for example, his father passed away, and then within a short time after that, his mother passed away, so he didn't have a chance to take a haircut after the first one, so therefore now he's allowed to take during Avelos of the second one. So the implication is, also the galeach b'moed, also the galeach b'me'efoy. So the implication is, vice versa, that where you're not allowed to take a haircut during Chol HaMoed, you're also not allowed to take a haircut during Avelos. Now, says Reb Pinchas, V'i amet cotton isbe plugda. If you're going to tell me that within a child, there's a difference, that only if the child was born during Chol HaMoed are you allowed to cut his hair on Chol HaMoed, but if he was born before Chol HaMoed, then you're not allowed to. Well then, Nimtis Avelos Nehegas for cotton, then it comes out, since we're saying that the rules for Chol HaMoed and for Avelos would be the same, it would come out that a cotton who's an oval is not allowed to cut his hair. So it would come out that Avelos is applying to a cotton. V'hotanya, but that can't be because we learn in a b'raisa, mekarin l'kotin mipnei agmas nefesh. When a child's relative who if he was older, he would be sitting shiva for, passes away, you tear the child's clothing, but not because the child himself is chayev in avelus, but only mipnei agmas nefesh. Only in order to make other people feel bad, that this way they'll cry more and honor the mess more, seeing that his own son, his own child, has to be walking around with ripped clothes, even when he's little. But we see, in other words, Avelos in and of itself does not apply to a cotton. So why should we say then that there are certain ketanim where you're not allowed to give them a haircut during Chol HaMoed, implying that those ketanim also, you wouldn't be able to give them a haircut during Avelos, according to what we're saying. There's no reason to do that because a cotton is not chayev in Avelos. Omer Rav Ashi, but Rav Ashi says that's not a valid proof. Mi katoni ho asurin, the part that you, Rav Pinchas, are deriving from the Braisa, that those who are allowed to cut their hair on Chol HaMoed in the same circumstances will be allowed to during Avelos, and you, Rav Pinchas, are deriving from that and saying the flip side is also anybody who's not allowed during Chol HaMoed is not allowed during Avelos. Not necessarily. Doesn't say that. Duma Yeshman also be Yeshman Mutter. Maybe some of them are mutter, some of them are mutter. So therefore, in other words, so you have some people who are also to cut their hair on Chol HaMoed are also to do it during Avelos. And then you have other cases where it's also during Chol HaMoed, but would be mutter during Avelos. So therefore, a child could be one of them. So no proof. It's possible that there are some children whose hair you're not allowed to cut during Chol HaMoed. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amema v'itamer of Shisha b'edir of Idi masni ho. Amema, or some say of Shisha b'edir of Idi, learned the discussion differently. The first version we had was that Shmuel said that only if the kid was born during Chol HaMoed are you allowed to cut his hair, but not otherwise. Now, the second version is, Amar Shmuel, katan mutar l'galchei b'moed, you're allowed to cut a kid's hair on Chol HaMoed, lo shna nolad b'moed v'lo shna nolad mikra, doesn't matter whether he was born before Chol HaMoed or whether he was born on Chol HaMoed or earlier. And according to that, Amar Rav Pinchas, afa na nami tanena, according to that version, Rav Pinchas is not bringing the braisa as a contradiction to Shmuel, but rather as a support for what Shmuel was saying. We learn in a braisa, kol elo sh'omru mutar l'galeach b'moed, all the cases where the Chachamim said you're allowed to cut your hair during Chol HaMoed, mutar l'galeach b'mei Avloi, you'd also be allowed to cut your hair during Avelos, implying, says Rav Pinchas, ha asurin l'galeach b'moed, asurin l'galeach b'mei Avloi, implying the flip side that anybody who can't cut their hair during Chol HaMoed can't do it in a similar circumstance during Avelos. So Rav Pinchas says, i'amet cotton asur, if you were to say that there's ever a case where it's also to cut a kid's hair, nimtas avelos nehegas b'katan, then it would come out that you have a case of avelos applying to a kid, v'tanya makarin l'katan of nagmas nefesh, and we said that no, a kid does kriya, not because he's chayiv in any adinim of avelos, but only in order to make other people feel bad and cry in honor of the mess. So that shows that kids are not chayiv in avelos. Therefore, it makes sense, as Rav Pinchas, to say that you're allowed to cut a kid's hair during Chol HaMoed the same way as you would be allowed to cut it during his Avelos. But Omer Rav Ashi, says that's not a valid proof, because like we said before, mi katoni ho asurin, the Braisa never said anything about that on the other hand, it is also, that anybody who's also doing Chol HaMoed is also doing Avelos. Maybe they're also, maybe not. Duma Yeshman also be Yeshman Mutter. Maybe the Braisa means that when you have people who are also doing Chol HaMoed, some of them are also doing Avelos, some of them are not. So not necessarily is there a proof about a kid one way or the other. A lemaisa, the halacha is like Shmuel's second opinion. So you are allowed to cut a kid's hair during Chol HaMoed. And again, in general, we don't do that. But again, you have the question when it comes to an upsharonish, whether you do it during Chol HaMoed or the general minhag seems to be that you wait until after Yom Tov. Now the Gemara is going to start a discussion about various things that we're going to start with when various things that apply to an oval, and each one of them we're also going to discuss whether it applies to a menuda and whether it applies to a mitzvah. We put all those three together in the Mishnah. We said, for example, that an oval is not allowed. That an oval we're going to say that an oval is not allowed to cut his hair. And the same way we said a person who was a mitzvah is cutting his hair during Chol HaMoed because he couldn't before, and a menuda is allowed to cut his hair because he wouldn't before. So we're going to go through a bunch of things like that. So the first one is oval ain't a noyag avelus beregel. Now an oval does not keep his avelus during Chol HaMoed. Shenema during Yom Tov or during Chol HaMoed. Shenema v'samachta b'chagecha, because after all the pasuk says you should be happy on your Yom Tov. So therefore e avelus to meikrahu. So if we're talking about an avelus that he had that started before Yom Tov, the reason why he doesn't do it on Yom Tov, and in fact we're going to learn later on in the perek that Yom Tov cancels the avelus. Now, Yom Tov in general cancels Avelos. We're going to talk about later in the parak. There can be certain exceptions to that. And in particular, Yom Tov does not always cancel Shloshim. So you can have a case where Avelos does apply during Chol HaMoed, but nevertheless, he doesn't actually keep it during Chol HaMoed. Shenema v'samachta b'chagecha. So therefore, e Avelos to me'ikrahu, if this is an Avelos that started before Yom Tov, then the reason why it stops during Yom Tov, osi esed rabim v'dochi esed yachid. Because the esse that applies to the rabbim of a samachta b'chagecha overrides the esse that belongs to the yachid, namely avelos is only a mitzvah on the individual. Tosfos discusses, does that mean that avelos is a mitzvah d'oraisa? So Tosfos says, maybe not. So maybe what it is avelos is d'rabbanon, but simchas yom tev is also d'rabbanon. Even though you have a pasuk for samachta b'chagecha, that means that you have to bring shalmei simcha. Not necessarily does that mean all the other manifestations of joy on Yom Tov may only be Dirabbanan. So therefore, fine, we're saying both of them are essays Dirabbanan, but the essay that applies to the Rabbim overrides the essay of the Yochid. And the Avelos Tahashtahu, if we're talking about an Avelos that started during Yom Tov, so the person's relative passed away on Yom Tov or on Chol HaMoed, the reason why Avelos doesn't take effect is loy osi esed the yachid b'docha esed the rabbim. The flip side, an esse of the yachid, namely avelus, does not override the esse that applies to the rabbim of the samachta b'chagecha. So therefore, in all those cases, avelus doesn't apply during Chol HaMoed. With that said, though, there are poskim who say that maybe dvorim shebitzina are noyig. Maybe, for example, a person in such a situation is not allowed to have relations with his wife or certain other. Or there's certain other things that are considered dvorim shebitzina that he wouldn't be allowed to do. So he's not allowed to show public avelos, but there would be things in private that he's not allowed to do. Maybe different posts can talk about the possibilities with that. So now menuda maush yinig nidui beregel. So the question becomes: if a person is in nidui, and we said, for example, he's not allowed to cut his hair or wash his clothes, so does he have to keep that during Chol HaMoed, or maybe does Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed suspend that? Amr Rabbi Yosef, Toshma. So Rabbi Yosef says here, we can prove it from a braisa that says that on Chol HaMoed, donin dini nefoshes, you're allowed to judge dini nefoshes, b'dini makus, and cases involving where the person might get malchus, b'dini mamonis, and also dini mamonis. You're allowed to judge all those things during Chol HaMoed. Now, says Rabbi Yosef, the Isaf Daita, and the Eli, now we know that the Eloi Tzayis Dina, we know that when a person is being judged in Dini Mamonis, if he doesn't want to obey the Beis Din's directives, they tell him to come to Beis Din, or they tell him to pay, or whatever it is, and he doesn't want to, then Misham Tinin, like, we know that we put him in Cherem. Well, the Isaac Daidach in a Noig Niduya Beregel. So, says Rabbi Yosef, if you're going to say that his nidui wouldn't apply during Chol HaMoed, if you were going to say it was suspended, or if you were going to say that it's suspended for Chol HaMoed, well, what's the logic? Mishumas v'osi me'ikra osi regel dochile. You're telling me that if somebody was in nidui before Chol HaMoed, then Yom Tov suspended it. Hashtem Hashem Sinan Le'anan. Would it be logical to say that doing Chalamoyed itself, you could put him in Nidui? Obviously not. And it has to be that you can be able to put him in Nidui because you have to have some way of enforcing your judgment. Beis Din tells him to do such and such. He doesn't want to, so they have to put him in Nidui. Now, by the way, usually you have that you have to announce Monday and Thursday before that, a few times before they put him in Nidui, but you have certain cases, for example, where to begin with, he says, I don't plan to listen to the Beis Din at all, where there they can put him in Nidui right away. So there can be cases where they put him in Nidui and they have to be able to in order to be able to enforce their decision. So obviously, if they can put him in Nidui during Chalamoyed, says Rabbi Yosef, what's the logic that Chalamoyed should take away his Nidui, should suspend his Nidui? Omalei Abaya. So Abaya says, why? Not necessarily. V'dumala ayuni v'dine. Maybe when we say that we're allowed to judge dine nefoshes and dine makas and so forth, doesn't mean to give the psach din. It just means that they can discuss it during Chalamoyed. They can look into it. De'ilo temahavi. After all, says Abaya, if you don't think like that, what about dine nefoshes dekatoni? When you say that you can do dine nefoshes during Chalamoyed, hachinami dekatan lei, would you mean that they can actually execute him during Chalamoyed? If they do that, then the Beis Din is not going to have Simchas Yomtev. The Tanya, Rabbi Akiva, Omer, Minayim L'Sanhedrin Shehogu Asanefesh, and Shirov Echad is a mistake. That's long to a different case. How do we know this if the Sanhedrin executes somebody? She'ein Toyamin Kol Oseh Yom, they're not allowed to eat anything all that day. Therefore, the pasuk says, don't eat on the blood, which there's many different meanings of what that loisase means, but one of them is, on a day when they're spilling blood, when they're executing somebody, then they're not allowed to eat. So if you say that they're allowed to judge dini nefoshes on Chalamoyed, then they have a day during Chalamoyed where they're fasting. So obviously they can't be doing that. So obviously, says Abaya, we must mean that they're talking about considering the case, is the person chayev misa or not, but not actually judging and deciding the case. So the same way you can answer as far as dine mominus. Doesn't mean they're allowed to actually paskin the dine mominus, and therefore that might necessitate putting the person in chayrim if he doesn't want to listen. Maybe it only means that they consider the case and they look in Shulchan Aruch and whatever, but they don't actually come to a decision yet. However, Rabbi Yosef answers to that. You can't say that it means that they're only looking into the case of dinei nefoshes and not actually judging it on Chalamoyed. Im kein nimtzeis ma'anes dinoi. In that case, then you're delaying his judgment unnecessarily because inu yadin, which is a very serious thing involved, where you're deliberately delaying the judgment and therefore it causes the person agmas nefesh. Even you tell him that he's going to be chayiv misa, fine, but at least there's a certain finality to it, more so than if he's wondering what's going to happen. So you're not allowed to do that. So how could you be saying that how could you Abaya be thinking that it means only la yulim b'dine? Ella, so not Ella. So rather, what do we do in order to avoid the problem of fasting on Chalamoyed? Also, mitzafro ma'ayne b'dine, what the Beis Din will do, they'll gather together in the morning, they'll look into the case, va'ayli va'achli v'shasa kula yema, then they'll go home and they'll eat and drink throughout the day. V'ahadu also v'shkia sachama, then they'll come back close to shkia, v'gaminu l'dine v'kotvulei, and then they'll finish the din Torah, and then they'll execute him. So that way, they're not actually fasting the whole day, because when we say Sanhedrin, Shaharuk HaSanefesh, means after the execution, they're not allowed to eat. Fine, in this case, they make sure the execution is as late as possible in the day. So you could say that it means they can actually judge Dini Nefashis on Chalamoyed. Therefore, by the same token, when we say judging Dini Mominus, we mean actually judging them. And therefore, that necessarily means that they can put them in Chayrim, and therefore the answer would be that no, Yom Tov and Chalamoyed do not prevent them from putting him in chayrim, and therefore, by the same token, it doesn't suspend his nidui. He still has to keep the dinim of nidui during chalamoyed. To be continued tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.
Yes, Shekayah, have a wonderful day.